Yeah, VOA One the Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, you will hear reports from Dan Novak, along with Gregory Stockel and Brian Lynn. Brian also joins me to talk about the updated COVID-19 vaccines coming next month. Finally, Katie Weber and I explore the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park. But first,
India will soon attempt to land a spacecraft on the point farthest south on the moon, its south pole. The attempt comes just days after the failure of a Russian moon lander. India's space agency on Monday released images its spacecraft captured on the far side of the moon. That is the part of the moon that cannot be seen from Earth. The Indian Space Research Organization, or ISRO, launched the spacecraft called the Chandrayaan-3. ISRO had been in a race with Russia to be the first national space agency to land on the lunar South Pole. The area is thought to hold water ice that could support a future moon settlement. As news of the failure of Russia's Luna 25 mission spread on Sunday, ISRO said that Chandrayaan-3 was set to land on August 23rd. The mission is India's second attempt to land on the south pole of the moon. In 2019, ISRO's Chandrayaan-2 mission successfully launched an orbiter, but its lander crashed. Chandrayaan means moon vehicle in Hindi and Sanskrit. The ground at the lunar south pole is uneven, making landing there difficult. A first landing would be historic. The area's water ice could supply fuel, oxygen, and drinking water for future missions. Images released on Monday showed craters on the moon's surface captured by the spacecraft's camera. The camera is designed to help identify a safe landing place for the spacecraft. India's moon mission launched on July 14th. The Chandrayaan-3's lander separated from the rest of the spacecraft last week. For India, a successful moon landing would mark its arrival as a world space power. Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government aims to increase investment in private space launches and related satellite-based businesses. Manish Purohit is a former ISRO scientist. If Chandrayaan-3 succeeds, it will boost India's space agency's reputation worldwide, he said. Russia's Luna 25 spacecraft crashed into the moon after it went into an uncontrolled orbit, the country's Roscosmos space agency said Sunday. The pilotless spacecraft had been expected to land Monday. However, Roscosmos said it lost contact with the Luna 25 on Saturday after the spacecraft reported problems. Vitaly Egorov is a popular Russian space expert. He said the mission had some successes, although it crashed. Luna 25 showed important progress. It flew toward the moon, carried out orbit correction, and tested onboard electronics and scientific tools, he said. Russian cosmonautics was not at this level before. But then an error occurred somehow. The lunar mission was Russia's first since 1976, when it was known as the Soviet Union. Only three governments have successfully landed on the moon: the Soviet Union, the United States, and China. Scientists at ISRO have said they learned from the earlier moon mission's failure and made changes to Chandrayaan-3. They said a successful landing is now more likely. The changes include making it possible to land safely anywhere within a larger landing area in difficult conditions. It also holds more fuel, carries additional solar panels, and has stronger legs. I'm Dan Novak.
Water is required for plant life. But what happens when there is too much of a good thing? That has been the case in many parts of the world this summer. Scientists say extreme rainfall happens more often now as storms form in an atmosphere made warmer by climate change. Nick Goltz is head of the Yukon Plant Diagnostic Laboratory at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. He said, "Too much water can mean dead plants in a garden." Goltz explained that flooding cuts off the oxygen supply, which leads to root rot diseases. And then plants cannot pull enough water to survive. The result is yellow, weakening leaves, which would usually show a plant's need for water. But after flooding, those same signs mean that roots underwater cannot function in really wet conditions. Avoid walking on wet soil if your garden has been affected by flooding. Wait until the soil has mostly dried before looking at the damage. Adding any weight or pressure to wet soil can cause even more oxygen to be pressed out from around struggling roots. A plant with just a few signs of damage may recover, but a plant that is completely weakened probably will not, Goltz said. He added that plants with strong, deep roots, like trees and yearly returning plants, have the best chances of recovery. Annuals are plants that live for less than a year. Their roots are not as deep and they are at risk if flooded. Goltz advised removing annuals if they look unhealthy. Plants weakened or stressed by flood water can more easily get diseases and unwanted insects. So keep an eye on them and treat problems as they come, which could be months later. Broken tree branches should be removed immediately. But save any major removal of leaves and branches for when conditions improve to avoid further weakening an already stressed tree. Flooded fruits, vegetables, and other crops should be considered unsafe and not eaten. Goltz said, "If the part you're eating touches the water, then it's unsafe, even if washed or cooked. That is because in addition to bacteria from standing water, runoff from nearby gardens, chemicals, and other waste could be present, Goltz added. However, if your garden was flooded, but the food part of the plant was not, then it can be eaten, Goltz said. But even then, he said, it is best to wash and cook the food part. After dealing with your plant's needs, turn your attention to the flooded soil, which will also need some care. Flooded soil loses nutrients and can damage the way water flows through it. Mixing in compost will help on both counts, and mixing in sand will improve the way water flows through it as well. If you live in an area that easily floods, there are steps you can take to avoid or lessen future damage, such as growing vegetables in higher areas or raised beds. Or you could direct water away from the plants you care about most. I'm Gregory Stockel.
The latest COVID-19 vaccine is set for release in September, but health experts say it remains unclear how many Americans will choose to get the new shot. The efforts to prepare a new vaccine come as hospitals in the United States report increases in COVID-19 patients since early July. But the number of hospitalizations is still far below those reported earlier this year and throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. A drop in infections has caused demand for the vaccine to fall sharply since the first shot became available in 2021. Officials say that overall, more than 240 million people in the U.S. had received at least one COVID-19 injection. That number represents about 73% of America's population. By autumn of 2022, fewer than 50 million people got the vaccine shots. By that time, most people in the U.S. had either been infected with COVID-19 or had received at least one shot. Public health experts have advised people to look at COVID-19 vaccines the same as they do shots for other sicknesses, such as the flu. Flu vaccines are developed to fight the latest virus versions called variants and are generally administered once per flu season. But efforts to get people to seek COVID-19 shots are likely to be hurt by decreasing concern about the virus. Some people also question if the vaccines are safe. Healthcare providers and drug businesses have said they plan to start offering the new COVID-19 vaccine next month. The vaccine was developed to fight virus versions linked to the Omicron variant, which has been spreading in the U.S. since last year. Ashley Kurzinger is a lead researcher with the Kaiser Family Foundation. She told Reuters news agency that health officials need to send a clear message to the public that COVID-19 has not gone away. In addition, the messaging should note the new vaccine can protect individuals from serious sickness and hospitalization. Kerzinger noted her foundation has carried out public opinion studies on the issue. She said the top reason vaccinated people gave for rejecting more vaccinations was the belief that people were protected from the virus because of earlier shots or infections. The two largest COVID-19 vaccine makers, Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna, have predicted far less demand this autumn for the shots. Last year, vaccine sales by Pfizer and Moderna reached a combined $56 billion worldwide. This year, experts estimate the shots will bring in $20 billion for the companies. The COVID-19 public health emergency officially ended in May. Since then, the government has handed over much of the vaccination effort to private companies. More than 1.1 million people in the United States have died from COVID. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, reports. The CDC and U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, are considering for approval the final versions of the new vaccine. CDC Director Mandy Cohen said last week she expects the shots to be launched during the third or fourth week of September. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his health report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Sure, Ashley. Glad to be here.
Your report examined progress on new COVID-19 vaccines being prepared to release next month. We learned in the report that these vaccines will target the very latest versions of the virus that are spreading in the United States. What have health officials said so far about these versions, or variants?
So what officials have said about the latest variants is they're closely related to the Omicron variant, which has been quite common in the U.S. since last year, and a couple of new variants have been spreading as the U.S. sees a rise in COVID-19 hospitalizations in some areas. But health experts have said the new versions are not believed to be more contagious than previous ones.
Health officials noted that even though the new vaccines are being prepared, a lot of people are not likely to get them. What is the main reason for this?
Well, the main reason they're giving is there's a definite feeling among much of the public that COVID-19 is really no longer a big problem, and the majority of people have already received at least one vaccine in the past or have gotten the virus. Some also suggest that once official pandemic restrictions went away, this was taken to mean that the virus is really no longer a serious problem for most people.
And how are officials saying they plan to change this public feeling so that more people will decide to get the new vaccine?
They say they will be trying the same methods as in the past to raise awareness about the importance of the vaccines and especially getting the message across that research has clearly shown that vaccinated people suffer fewer effects from the virus. and they generally also recover faster from sickness than non-vaccinated individuals.
Okay, thanks again for being here, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Our National Parks journey takes us to New Orleans, Louisiana, the city many consider to be the birthplace of jazz. New Orleans is a port city at the mouth of the Mississippi River. It holds one of the most famous cultural celebrations in America, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, called Jazz Fest for short. The first New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival took place in 1970. That year, about 350 people attended the five-day celebration. 5 years later, about 80,000 people attended the festival. Today, attendance is measured in hundreds of thousands. The festival's original organizers said the event could only be held in New Orleans, because here and here alone is the richest music tradition in America. And only in New Orleans could you find a whole national park honoring jazz. Today, we are exploring the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park.
The park includes sites important to jazz history in New Orleans. Visitors can walk around the city to see these sites. They include places located in the oldest part of the city, the French Quarter, as well as in the Louis Armstrong Park.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's one you all can sing with us when the Saints go marching in.
Louis Armstrong is one of the greatest American jazz musicians. His voice, trumpet playing skill, and creativity continue to influence jazz artists today. Armstrong was born in New Orleans in 1901. Jazz was just beginning to develop when Louis was a boy. It grew out of the blues songs and ragtime music that had been popular at the turn of the century. Louis Armstrong discovered music early in life. He was surrounded by it. By the time he was 18, he joined the Kid Ory Band, one of the finest bands in New Orleans. In the 1920s, Armstrong moved on to Chicago and then New York, which had become major centers of jazz music. The trumpeter soon became one of the most famous musicians of his time. In the 1930s, he had his own big band, called Louis Armstrong and His Orchestra. But his biggest hits came later in his life. In 1964, his version of the song Hello Dolly was the top hit around the world, and the song What a Wonderful World, recorded in 1968, was his final big hit. Armstrong died in 1971. In 1980, the city of New Orleans opened the Louis Armstrong Park to honor one of the city's most famous sons. Among other sites, the park includes a statue of Armstrong himself and a place called Congo Square. Throughout history, the square has had many names. Congo Square was once used as an area where slaves were permitted to perform African and Caribbean dances and drumming. The sounds played a role in the development of jazz. Today, the city holds the annual Congo Square Rhythms Festival there.
Another stop within the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park is the J&M Recording Studio. It lies just south of the Louis Armstrong Park on Rampart Street. The studio operated from 1945 to 1955. Cosimo Matassa, a recording engineer, was the owner of the studio. He recorded some of the greatest jazz and rhythm and blues artists of the time. Today, the spot is a laundromat. But a small sign on the building points out its important place in music history.
Next, we visit the Mint. A mint is a place that produces coins. The Mint started out as a place where U.S. and Confederate currency was made. But today, the Mint has a famous performing arts center and a museum full of jazz history. That museum is the Louisiana State Museum. Here, visitors can see Louis Armstrong's first cornet, a brass instrument similar to a trumpet. He bought it in New Orleans when he was 15 years old. The National Park Service holds live educational performances at the Mint most days of the week. Many of those performances are streamed live online for viewers around the world to enjoy.
Another park site is Preservation Hall in the French Quarter. The word preservation means keeping or protecting for the future. By the early 1960s, traditional New Orleans jazz music was in danger of disappearing. Young people wanted to hear the music of Elvis Presley and other rock and roll stars. Not many young people were interested in listening to jazz. In 1961, Alan and Sandra Jaffe began using a small old building on St. Peter's Street as a music hall. Musicians there played traditional New Orleans jazz, sometimes just for their own enjoyment. Alan Jaffe was a tuba player. He played with what became known as the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. The Jaffes created Preservation Hall to protect and preserve the city's traditional jazz sounds. Today, different bands play at the hall each night. Musicians also still play in the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. They play in concert halls around the United States. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.